Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, Slovakia, microfilms, the underground church and all that. The impact of reckless exploitation of the environment on the part of multinational corporations. A Nigerian bishop tells the story. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. This is a tale which has as a backdrop two cities which, if history had taken on a different course, might have merged into one large city. That's if there hadn't been an iron curtain drawn between them for many, many years. The cities of Vienna in the west and Bratislava are mere 40 kilometres to the east. So close, a tram once trundled to and fro between the two until very recently. Over the river Danube it went. The tale is really about keeping the faith alive, keeping in touch with an underground church, isolated from the free world. And the lead role in the tale is played, as you'll discover in a moment, by a seminarian turned a James Bond of sorts of the Catholic Church, with a mission not to protect England, but the Catholic Church. However, don't be misled, this is no fantasy. It's a true tale. One, this character recounts for us, describing his crossings across the border with microfilms hidden in his socks, all the while surrounded by ominous barbed wire fences.
Terrible fences, yes, and self-shooting devices and minefields and dogs and control roads and all this.
Turrets, yeah. With policemen who, yes, shot at,
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
No, they didn't,
yes,
shoot.
They would have.
They if would people have escaped?
Hesitated. Yes.
But you,
yes,
were going in, weren't you?
We were going in and then trying to get out again. Of course, for us young people, it was also very exciting and it was sort of James Bond 1, 2, 3 and so. And we had a purpose.
But you were risking your lives then?
Well, maybe not our lives, but we were risking certainly a few months of prison or something like this. I only remember one case who was caught, and he was imprisoned for a year and a half, which was certainly not too pleasant for him.
That was the voice of the seminarian in question. His name, Leo Marsberg, today a priest of the Diocese of Vienna, who heads the Austrian branch of the Pontifical Mission Society.
The most frightening thing was when you entered, you felt like entering under a big cloud. There was this cloud of permanent control. You felt watched, totally. And you could not move, you would read through the mirror, you would read the number plate of the car following you, seeing whether it stays the same number, and so on. So you were under permanent pressure. It was, especially for us, it was a real nightmare.
Why did you go there? If it was such a nightmare, why did you go there?
The purpose was, well, I belonged to a small group who lived the message of Fatima, the spirituality of Our Lady of Fatima, and we were founded by Bishop Nilitzer, and he directed us towards evangelization in Eastern Europe, and at that time it was practically impossible. So our evangelization consisted in keeping contact with the underground church and helping them with books or with information or just being there with them so that they feel that they were not left alone. And it was For us, it was a very challenging thing and very, very beautiful work because we saw their spirituality. And I remember very much, once I met with Silvo Krčmeri, and he was still a layperson, a medical doctor, and he himself had spent, I can't remember now precisely, but at least 10 or 14 years in the concentration camp, of which 7 years in a solitary confinement. But he had prepared himself because he knew that he would be in prison. And so in order to be able to evangelize, he learned the whole Gospel of St. John by heart in Russian because he was convinced there would be Russian soldiers imprisoning them. And so he lived on that. He meditated that gospel every day and he survived in a tremendous discipline, even 7 years of solitary confinement. Mm. Those who know that this is a miracle. I met him, for example, and he asked me, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm a seminarian. And I asked him, well, I've seen your little, here, the small booklet with a very, very minusculous writing. And he had appointments every 20 minutes. Medical doctor, being a medical doctor for medical reasons, but also for his keeping contacts with the underground church. And that from probably 7 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. And I knew that he was a very prayerful person, so he would pray at least 2 or 3 hours at night. So he would sleep very little. So I asked him, but Silva, how do you manage to do all your appointments and at the same time you're a very peaceful person? And he said, well, that's very, very simple. You pray, you know. I mean, what do they teach you in your seminary? He said. And I said, well, but how do you organize your life? And he said, well, very simple. First priority, relationship with God, your prayer life. And that means at least 3 hours prayer every day. I thought, wow, as a seminarian, we certainly did not reach 3 hours. Second, all the natural obligations you have, your family and so on, and then all the rest. We left enriched by the people we met there.
Did you meet Cardinal Koretz ever?
Yes, I met Cardinal Koretz, and he also impressed me very, very much. He was such a simple, kind, courageous person. I remember one instance when I brought him a message, and he asked me some questions, but he put a tube, a long tube, about a meter tube, to my mouth, and then switched on the radio and put the tube to his ear, and then I was supposed to speak. And when he answered, he put the tube to his mouth and spoke into my ear, because he said his whole room was full of bugs.
So it was bugged.
It was bugged. He could not communicate normally, otherwise everything would be known.
You say that you were enriched by their example. You mentioned James Bond. Well, so you were actually bringing information into the country.
We were bringing information, and we took information from them. They had an engineer who produced microfilms, and we brought them back into the so-called free world and across the border. That was always connected with a bit of anxiety, I would say, when you approach the control, the checkpoint, and then. And actually, I was checked once. I had to undress completely, and I had microfilms in my socks. And they check everything, every pocket, everything. Except the socks, because I said they smelled, and I threw them to the side. But I was shaking. I mean, you can imagine, no? And then they just pushed them aside with the other stuff. And then when I put it back on after a quarter of an hour or so, then the microfilms, they were bent inside the socks, but I couldn't pay attention to that. I had to step on them, so some of them were not.
Not, ruined.
They were ruined, partly ruined, but the decisive or the interesting contents, they were still there.
Today it seems like a flashback, like a film or like something unreal.
Yes, oh yes. I remember very well the day the frontier opened. On the first day after the breakdown of communism in Slovakia, they had withdrawn the guards and the frontier was completely open. You could pass and nobody would look at passports or anything. So I happened to be in Vienna, so I took a car and with friends we went to Bratislava. And the difference we experienced was astonishing. We entered the same road which I had done with my bike many times, because I always used the bike. I left the car near the frontier, took out the bike from the boot, and that same road was open. Everything was open. You had all these checkpoints, all the barriers open. And we entered, and I had the impression that pressure was gone. The pressure which I mentioned before, the total control pressure was gone. What was left was only dirt. Everything filthy. Everything. I mean, filthy in all senses, not only on the floor or the street, or people, cars, everything filthy. Now when I go back, I feel always that they're continuing the cleanup. It's getting better and better and better. Now they start even cleaning the houses from outside and then putting new paint. It's sort of regaining its beauty, because that was one of the worst destructions of communism, that the loss of beauty. Communists didn't produce anything beautiful. It only lived on pre-existent beauty, or beauty which came from abroad. Even in arts, you have not one single piece of art which under a communist regime was produced. So, well, unless you think that the Lenin statue is a piece of art, then.
But some of the priests in Slovakia escaped via the Danube, mm-hmm. I believe. Mm-hmm. Was there knowledge of this in Vienna?
Yes.
Did you help them at all when this happened?
Well, I was not involved. That happened mainly after they were imprisoned when was that? April 1951. So then many escaped. Then the frontier wasn't that well controlled yet. So they could, with a boat.
But they tell me that this happened even later, though.
Yeah. They came out even later. But it was always under big risk of life. Because, I don't know whether you know the Danube, I would not like to cross the Danube on a boat at all. Because the Danube is a big river, it's not just small. So to do it at night, maybe with children on the boat, then they didn't know where they came, where they landed. No? They didn't know, did they do it properly, or did they land near the control post somewhere on the other side, because the Slovaks had control, the Czechoslovak had control posts on the other side as well. And then, even in Austria, they didn't know where they were. So they had to follow, sometimes at night, for some time, and then they met dogs, and the farmers there, they were scared, and it was a very, very dark time.
You were listening there to Monsignor Leo Marsberg, National Director of the Pontifical Mission Society in Austria. As you may have noticed a moment ago, one of the people I asked him about was a Slovakian Jesuit, Jan Chrysostom, Cardinal Korys, one who only 3 years after the end of the Second World War witnessed the enactment of that dire order from Moscow.
It won't be long before we'll turn the last church building into a museum.
It all happened in one night. The date was the 13th of April 1950, when across Slovakia, which was then still part of Czechoslovakia, priests, nuns and religious woke to the sound of communist militia and police breaking in to their monasteries and convents, only to take them away, placing them under police surveillance, sometimes even packing them off to concentration camps. Cardinal Korys himself would, 10 years later, serve 8 years out of a 12-year prison sentence in a jail in what is now the Czech Republic. It was a night that would darken the days for Catholics in Slovakia. And not only Catholics. And one which would go down in history as the Night of the Barbarians. After all, it put an end to 1,000 years of Christianity in this part of the world, bringing with it, as Cardinal Corris once told me in Italian, cruel persecution.
Era l'intervento più crudele da parte del regime comunista.
Just one night, and ancient monasteries were liquidated.
In una sola notte furono liquidati gli antichi monasteri.
One which precipitated Cardinal Corris headlong into the underground church, out of sight and out of reach.
We witnessed the destruction of our cultural heritage and the insinuation of fear among the faithful.
La ricchezza culturale era devastata e i fedeli impauriti.
A community, this hidden one, he would head a year later, aged 27, after being secretly ordained bishop, while the authorities believed him to be a factory worker. He soon ordained in turn 120 clandestine priests, published 60 books, secretly printed in Canada or Italy, and then secretly circulated among the thousands of Catholic faithful living their faith underground.
Faithful who, despite cruel persecution, defended their priests with courage.
I fedeli in Slovakia hanno difeso i loro sacerdoti con grande coraggio.
Many seminarians, the cardinal added, worked in dire circumstances, others as forced labor in uranium plants to the detriment of their health.
Erano condannati ai lavori forzati nelle cave di uranio a Yakhimo, senza la protezione contro i raggi.
But all the while, the cardinal insisted, the church was very much alive. And when I asked him if there had been more than one church in Slovakia, his reply was forceful.
There existed only one church. We acted together as a common force, completing each other's work.
Esisteva soltanto una sola chiesa in Slovakia. I sacerdoti che svolgevano...
There were, in fact, he told me, parish priests who'd obtained permits from the communist regime to run parishes, but they ran them in a parallel manner with us, despite the fact that one had to be wary of double dealing within the church itself. I asked the cardinal how the church survived this ordeal. He expressed his gratitude for the support he'd received from the free world. There was the media out there, he specified, especially radio, through which they even managed to hear the voice of John Paul II speaking to Slovakians during the weekly general audiences in Rome. Then there was the random personal contact with visiting tourists or with seminarians from networks such as that of Leo Marsburg.
Grazie a Vienna conoscevamo tutto questo.
And of course the knowledge that Rome was aware of their plight in the person of the Pope himself, Paul VI first, and then of course John Paul II, who had experienced life under communist regime. But ultimately, the cardinal added,
God helped us.
Dio ci aiutava.
Well, all that came to an end 20 years ago. I hope you found it interesting to step back in time. Thanks to Slovakian Jesuit Jan Chrysostom, Cardinal Corres, and Monsignor Leo Marsburg, National Director of the Pontifical Mission Societies in Austria. And now on a totally different note, I'd like to take you with me to another part of the world, Africa, so I can introduce you to the Bishop of Umuahia in Nigeria, Lucius Iwajuri Ugoji, whom I recently met at the Synod for Africa, which took place in October here in the Vatican, an effort to discuss reconciliation, justice and peace across this vast continent. On this occasion, Bishop Ugoji was kind enough to share with me some thoughts regarding the impact of reckless exploitation of the environment on the part of multinational corporations. But I won't give too much away. Just listen to Bishop Ugoji.
Environmental degradation in Nigeria and elsewhere in Africa is something that is serious. Well, let's begin by saying that the environment that God created is a very beautiful one, and on account of human carelessness and recklessness, a lot is being degraded. In the northern part of the country, for instance, there is a lot of overgrazing. People cut wood for firewood, for charcoal. This has led to the expansion of the desert, the Sahara Desert, and it's expanding at a pace that is very threatening. So it's necessary that we call the attention of people to that.
You're talking about sub-Saharan Africa?
Yes. Then there is also the activities of multinationals, particularly in the Niger Delta area where they prospect oil. The Niger Delta area is where the wealth of the country is, but unfortunately the environment is so degraded through oil spillage, so much so that those who were fishermen in the past can no longer undertake their occupation, as well as those who are farmers, because not only sea is polluted, but also land. So this has provoked many of the young people in the area to be militants. So we are encouraging multinationals that they rise up to their corporate social responsibility of helping to develop the area, building schools, hospitals, and the basic social infrastructure is needed in the area.
When you say we, you mean the church. How do you create this awareness?
The church has done quite a great deal. About 2 years ago, there was a seminar workshop on oil and gas. We invited all the stakeholders, both politicians, people from the oil sector, and so on. And at the end of the day, the church published a document on that, on oil and gas in Nigeria. I think it made some positive impact on some of the multinationals, but the degradation of the environment has continued.
It threatens the prospects of peace, or anyway heightens tensions and conflicts, no?
Yeah, it does, particularly in the Niger Delta area, where many young people now have taken to kidnapping for ransom. Initially, they were kidnapping people in order to draw attention to what is happening in the area. But midway, some elements of criminals crept into their ranks, and kidnapping now is spreading to different parts of the country, not only in the Niger area. So it is this degradation of the environment that has now sparked this off and is spreading, causing insecurity in different parts of the country.
Which is connected to multinationals exploiting, no?
Yes, it certainly is something that has triggered it off. So it's closely linked to it.
Did other people at the Synod speak about the environment? Do you feel that it was given enough attention?
Oh, very many interventions at the General Assembly revolved around the environment. And also in our small group discussion, a lot was also done about environment. And it's within that context that we also heard about how some multinationals go to Africa to buy up arable lands, and some cases wooded plains and valleys are destroyed because people cut these trees and transport them abroad. Especially the Chinese are doing that in many parts of Africa presently.
Are there so many Chinese?
In Nigeria, not as much as in other parts of Africa, but Of course, a good number are presently in Nigeria too.
What would you like to see happen in Nigeria in terms of greater awareness? Is there a network throughout Nigeria regarding this particular theme or not?
There are some NGOs that talk about the environment, and of course the church at the parish level, at the national level also. Sometime in the past, I think in the year 2000, we dedicated our cathedral. One of the major things we did was encouraging people to plant trees. If one cuts one tree, let him plant two.
The synod has come to an end. How would you comment?
Well, the message of the synod is a very powerful one, and I believe that when it is published, it will achieve the goals for which it was written. First and foremost, we try to draw the attention of the world to Africa. Africa is a continent that is blessed with many resources. And at the same time, whenever you are talking of development in the world, it appears to be at the bottom. Part of the problem is self-inflicted wounds on account of corrupt leadership. But other problems are from outside, namely the effects of colonialism and neo-colonialism, particularly in the area of international trade, the international debt burden, and of course the activities of multinationals. So these are some of the areas that have really impacted negatively on Africa. Attention was also drawn to the fact that the church is an agent of reconciliation. We are meant to be ambassadors of reconciliation. First and foremost, reconciliation with God will bring about reconciliation with one another. So the vertical dimension of reconciliation through prayer and the sacraments will impact that we are not only reconciled with God, but also reconciled with our neighbors. So every Christian, every member of Christ Faithful is meant to be an agent of reconciliation, justice and peace, beginning with the bishops, the clergy, the religious, and the lay faithful in their various rank. In whatever theater of life each operates, each is expected to be an agent of reconciliation, justice and peace. And there are other special concerns the bishops looked into, and namely migration, the problem of migration. Poverty and hardship has resulted in worldwide migrations. We find Africans in different places. Many of them are doing good work. Others are struggling to survive and at times find themselves in very difficult situations on account of the restrictive laws now regarding immigration. Then we also had some concern expressed with respect to disease in Africa, tuberculosis, malaria, and HIV/AIDS. There was also concern shown regarding the young people, because they are the targets of many ideologies and sects. And of course, a lot of concern was expressed on the family, which is also the victim of many poisonous ideological trends that are targeting African families. So these are some of the areas where the bishop showed some concern.
And my thanks there go to the Bishop of Umuahia in Nigeria, Lucius Uwejuru Ugoji. And that brings this broadcast to an end. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening. Laudetur Jesus Christus.